This is Rebuilding Democracy. The polarizing political rhetoric in our country has combined with the coronavirus to bring some unusual stresses to public health and our public schools. In the case of public health, 2020 was the year Anthony Fauci, Deborah Birx, Ashish Jha, and several other public health officials became household names. They were on our TV screens daily, the faces and voices we associated with the virus. In Washington, we saw a lot of Governor Jay Inslee and Department of Health Secretaries John Wiesman and now Umair Shah as they shared news about state government's response. In Spokane County, the job of sharing information about the pandemic fell to Spokane's Regional Health District.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Public Information Officer Kelly Hawkins hosts Facebook Live meetings for the public and weekly briefings for reporters.
Okay, thank you, guys. We had a great Facebook Live today. We had Dr. Francisco Velasquez. He gave an overview about the announcements that were made at the state level on Monday. And then also we had our COVID-19 vaccine task force lead on, Kayla Myers, who addressed a lot of questions that we get from the community.
Hawkins has helped to guide the health district's public messaging throughout the pandemic.
We really focused on some of the lessons that we've learned dealing with other controversial issues, you know, like vaccinations or fluoridated water. Really focusing on the group of people who could be swayed one way or the other and possibly swayed by misinformation, and making sure that we address the truths as much as possible and get the factual information out there and be the resource for positive information and the resource for factual information, because we want people to come to us and not go searching for being led down a path of misinformation by someone on Facebook or someone on Twitter.
Even with the mission of providing scientifically accurate information, the health district has had its motivations questioned, especially when former health officer Bob Lutz was fired in November. Some in the community believe he was forced out because of his political views. Others have been unhappy that the state has moved more slowly than other states in removing COVID-related restrictions, and that has put the district in an uncomfortable position.
You know, it's a COVID-19 pandemic. It's not a political issue. And we saw often, you know, some of the questions you have caused us to feel like we were in the middle of a political debate rather than a recovery effort.
I think one of the things that kind of went against public health in through the pandemic has been how the information's constantly changing.
This is Health District Administrator Amelia Clark.
When we first started talking about, you know, the coronavirus and then COVID-19, you know, we were literally changing messages hourly, daily, you know, and I think that the public saw that maybe as a lack of, like, that became a lack of confidence. Like, do they not know what they're talking about? When it was really like, we did know what we were talking about based on the information we had. It's just the information kept changing. We were constantly playing catch up. And I know Kelly even, you know, like she would start to write something and then it's like, oh, well, let's start over. Like, it all changed.
A lot of our best practices, you know, of sitting down and writing out a communication plan and determining, okay, these are the key messages that we want to focus on. And here are key talking points. And you'd send those out. And the next day you'd be like, wait, I have changes to your key talking points. This is different. And we've received more information. And so really it's had to force us to adjust our strategy, just looking at the high level, like constant assessment, constant determination of who our audiences are, and just being as open and transparent and honest as we can. And also doing a lot of listening, like, what are we hearing? What is making people nervous about the pandemic?
You know, one of the things I would hear a lot of time just talking to my public health colleagues around the state, when are we going to get the federal plan? like what is the federal plan, you know, associated with what we're doing. Even now is a really great example as we talk about the vaccine rollout, just trying to figure out, you know, the whole supply chain of how that vaccine is going to get out to the states and then from the state level out to the health jurisdictions to get it, you know, in to get the shot in people's arms, which is what public health wants to have happen. I definitely think it's a big impact because when you're leaders, right, like we tend to look to those people, right? We tend to look to the president's office. We tend to look to the CDC. When they're not on the same page, I think it creates even more questioning and more opportunity for conspiracies and more just misinformation to be fueled in the community, in the public. When Governor Inslee just recently changed the phases, I think we're now, is it roadmap to recovery? Because see it even, right? Like, so even me keeping, right? It used to be start, safe start Washington. Now we're on roadmap to recovery. That was done. You know, I was on a call with DOH at like 9:30 one morning and literally at 2:30, he was making the announcement. And when I think about this, like with civil discourse, right, in mind, or kind of thinking about how do you make these decisions or work in a community, you've got to kind of look for that common ground piece. And the roadmap right now that has just come out without a lot of local input, you know, from the health jurisdictions. So, you know, obviously that causes more negative feedback and positive feedback. You get a little of both. I get questions here at the health district all the time about, you know, why did you set the rate at this, you know, for percent of positivity? And, you know, even just spending the time educating, I'm not the one who sets that rate, right? That comes from the governor. It has also shown me that we have more work to do as a profession of explaining to people what public health does.
Amelia Clark is the administrator for the Spokane Regional Health District. Kelly Hawkins is its public information officer.
Brother bought a coconut, he bought it for the dime. His sister had another one, she paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she drank and pulled up. She put the lime in the coconut, she called the doctor, woke him up and said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, Doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, get this straight. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you drank and bowed up. Put the lime in the coconut, you called your doctor, woke him up, said, Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said,
just like public health, public schools have spent a lot of their time in the COVID spotlight, and not always in a good way, says Spokane Superintendent Adam Swinyard.
School reopening has become such a divisive topic in our community, and we have a large group of citizens that are pro-open school advocates, and we've got a large group of citizens that are closed school advocates.
When the pandemic first hit, districts had little choice but to figure out how to remotely teach children. But as summer brought less community spread, each district had to make its own calculations and decisions about how to proceed in the fall and then communicate that to their patrons. Some brought all of their children back. Spokane opened its schools initially to the children with special needs who most needed in-person instruction. The others learned from home. And now children in most of the elementary grades are spending at least some time in the classroom.
We've always operated in the interest of safety and well-being by following the guidance of public health officials. And on any given school day, we're following literally hundreds of guidelines and regulations. And we didn't feel like this was a moment where we would start the practice of picking and choosing. And, you know, there's been times that has really frustrated the open school advocates. And there's been times it's really frustrated the closed school advocates. And so it has made for a really robust moment of lots of discourse and lots of communication and fielding lots of questions and lots of critique. I, from time to time, hear a perception that maybe school employees aren't working very hard because it's not a typical school environment. And I can assure the community that teaching in person in a pandemic, which we've been doing from the beginning, and we're adding grade levels back, we've had kids in the building from September, and we're adding all kids back by March 1st. That's a lot of work, as well as teaching distance learning is a lot of work. So, it's been a lot for our staff to manage, and it's not been easy. It hasn't been perfect for everyone by no means. And, we value and prioritize in-person learning. We want our kids back as soon as we can.
Even after those students return, Swinyard believes virtual functions will continue, perhaps for some children for whom that has worked, and for engaging parents.
Doug, we've had some school board meetings where we've had, 700, 800, almost 1,000 people at our school board meetings. And I think at the end of the day, that only strengthens our school district and strengthens our community when we've got that level of civic involvement and people that are engaging in that type of way. So I do think that there are aspects of this that we're going to learn from. There is so much hope for civil discourse in our community that maybe we have lost sight of a little bit. And I just know that even the citizens that have contacted me really, really angry and really frustrated, whether that's about the opening and closing schools or the levy, that taking the time to engage them and even celebrating with them the value of the exchange. And I typically thank people thank you so much for civil discourse. And I appreciate your hard questions, but I appreciate that we're able to have the conversation. I've learned a lot about how that can build bridges.
So I was just interviewing Brian Biggs, City Council President, and he told me about how he learned early on in his career not to take things personally. Have you figured that out yet?
No. We're all on that journey of to what extent we take things personally. But I think in moments like these, these decisions have huge ramifications. These decisions are critical, and I approach them always keeping in mind the gravity of that context.
In a nearby school district, Central Valley, Superintendent Ben Small has been stressing communication throughout the pandemic.
There's been times when we have been able to be ahead of communication, and it just has been spot on. And then there's been times when we've been hours or a day behind in communication, and it causes angst amongst people. And we just want to let our community know our goal is always to improve.
Central Valley is Spokane's second largest school district and one that is experiencing rapid growth. The district will open a new high school next fall. Small says Central Valley has always had an active outreach program, bringing in members of the community for open houses, concerts, and other special events. That, of course, has changed during this time of physical distancing. So Small says the district has found other ways to engage.
We've done Facebook Live, hosted by other public agencies. We have done webinars. From the very beginning of the school year, we believed that transparency was going to be vitally important to creating confidence in our system. And so we had voluntarily, created an instant response plan that had communication lined out for every scenario that we could go through. Letters home to parents from principals, emails from myself, automated phone messages that were recorded so that we could inform our community very, very quickly of positive cases in our school. We want families and parents to know what is happening individually in their school. We want families and parents to know what is happening in our district. And so they can go right to our website. They can see our quarantined students and staff. They could see positive students and staff numbers there. As we have experienced this pandemic, I think there have been things that complicate our communication strategies. One is just the length of how long this has gone on. The length of it creates, I think, fatigue amongst people. It creates fatigue amongst our staff as they have had to adjust. And then another one is the uncertainty and unpredictability of this pandemic. The pandemic has been dictated by how the virus outbreak is acting in our community. And so just when you think you have with some certainty action plans to go forward, those plans have to change in order to meet the safety needs of our staff, our students, and our community. And then I think the third thing that complicates this is that everybody brings their own belief system to this situation of COVID. And it is the belief systems that I think create an emotional response to how each of us individually believes about the course of action that our communities and our state have taken as a whole. How is it that you break through each of those and get to a place where you can communicate? And that has been a challenge.
Ben Small is the superintendent of the Central Valley School District in Spokane Valley. Coming up, we'll consider a question we've heard a lot the last few years. Why don't we teach civics in school anymore? This is Rebuilding Democracy from Spokane Public Radio. Thank you.